when you're playing a bad guy, I don't think that twisting the mustache and being like, I want to.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Be evil today. I don't think they think that. I think they think I want to survive like anybody else today, and I'm just making some bad choices to do so.
Welcome to Scream Dreams, the nightmares that shaped us. I'm Catherine Corcoran.
And I'm James A. Janisse. And joining us today is Doug Jones.
Well, hey, hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh my God. Every time you walk into a room, it just like lights up. We talk about nightlights on this show.
I have batteries.
Do you?
That's how it works.
No, truly, I don't think I've ever met someone who like is as like sweet and warm and like just warm. Welcoming to everybody.
Well, bless you. Thank you. Gosh, I didn't deserve that, but thank you.
No, it's true. Do you have nightmares? I feel like you can't possibly.
I haven't had nightmares, like, you know, scary things since I was a kid.
Really?
But I can tell you in detail what that was.
Yeah.
Oh,
do you want to hear right now?
They were that traumatic?
Well, for some reason. Okay, when I was a kid, I was one of four, the youngest of four boys, and we all had to rotate on washing dishes, and I absolutely hated it, right? But mom was like, it's your night. So I would be like, I'd stand at the sink for, it took me hours, because I was like, I don't want to do this. this recurring dream I had, it was more than once, was this woman who did not look like my mom at all. She had like blonde 50s hair and like heavily made up with bright red lipstick and bright red long fingernails. And so I would be in my dream walking around a corner, and there she would be, this woman dipping her hands in and out of dishwater, going, making that noise. I have no idea why, but I wake up going, nah, okay, what, right? So sorry about that. But you know what I'm saying? So she kept haunting me in my dreams, this woman, and I don't know what the threat was. I think the threat of
getting pruny fingers from doing the dishes.
Pruny fingers, maybe. Yeah. And also the not talking. She wasn't that's what scares me is when a figure is maybe trying to communicate and not doing it, not using words. Mm-hmm. Them not understanding me either when I'm using words. So I was like, what are you doing? So that's like, we're not meeting at the same place. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's kind of a little bit frightening, you know, because the unpredictability of it. What does she really want? Why is she here? And what are those fingernails going to, are those going to be in my eyeballs soon? I don't know.
That's funny considering that your career, you've played a lot of
non-speaking characters.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. Sometimes where communication is the central focus of the film.
And you can communicate non-verbally. I believe we're doing it right now, actually, with our posture and our gestures and our facial expressions. We're doing a lot of communicating right now.
Mm-hmm. Can I pause for 1 second?
Oh, what happened?
We just need to pull the mic away a little bit.
I blasted it too much?
No, well, it's catching too much of your breath. It's like a front-facing, so you don't really have to speak into it.
Oh, so it's a different mic than
ours.
I moved it in, like, to go, I don't know.
That is my tendency.
It's totally fine. It's just, it'll sound.
Is that the better rate?
Yeah, that's definitely better.
Yeah.
So just rephrase wherever you were.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. well, that's interesting since in your career you've played a lot of non-speaking creatures, sometimes where the inability to communicate is the central theme of the movie.
Right, and yet those characters do communicate. Well, let's take The Shape of Water, for instance. Mm-hmm. You had a mute janitor lady who was not using verbal dialogue, and you have a monster from the Amazon River in South America not communicating verbally, but they fell in love with each other. So they had to communicate somehow, didn't they? So I believe that more than half of our communication is the visuals we give off. Because you can say a line of dialogue, you can say get out in different ways. You can say, oh, get out, or you can say, get out, right? And that's completely different meaning for the same words, right? So much is communicated visually. But as a kid in a dream, I didn't know that yet. I just thought, she's not talking to him. Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
What is your process like in going into something non-verbally? How do you find the language of that character? I'm sure you're asked this all the time, but...
I don't hate answering it. I don't know. It's a matter of a writer and a script are my beginning point. Like, mm-hmm. where does my character fit into the story, and what story am I telling, and who am I interacting with, and how? So when you, I believe that things like touch, mm-hmm. and again the visuals, the posture, the facial expression, the lean or the recoil, all speak so mm-hmm. much. So I'm going to go back to The Shape of Water. I'm sorry. But it's rare that I come up against another mute character. Mm-hmm. So the two of us, something Guillermo del Toro did that was really super smart. We had a dance number in that movie. It was a fantasy in her mind that she was in a black and white MGM musical with me. And we're like Fred mm-hmm. and Ginger dancing. But I'm in a fish suit. Rather unique. So we had dance rehearsals for about 3 weeks before the film started shooting. And so during that time, Sally and I had a chance to get to know each other and bond. And we were both sharing our fears about this movie. Like, it's so important. It's like, it's Oscar worthy. We know that going in. It's important to Guillermo del Toro. And I've worked with him on 5 movies before that. So I didn't want to let him down. And she didn't want to let him down. We're both like having imposter syndrome. We went through a lot together during those dance rehearsals. We laughed, we cried, we sat, and we also learned a dance number. And so trust was built during that time. When you're doing dips and lifts with somebody in a dance number, trust has to be there anyway. Mm-hmm. But then emotionally, and you know, she could even confide in me, like, something went wrong dentally, I need to go see a dentist today. I'm like, oh, and she was like whispering to you, what should I do? I'm like, okay. So back and forth. And then by the time the camera rolled on us, we had a relationship in place and trust in place. And so that hopefully that communicated. The touch thing I mentioned, words, we can deceive with words, but when you touch someone or hug someone, or you can tell they're, you can't lie with touch, I don't think, as nearly as much. Mm-hmm. You have to be really good at it to lie. Yeah. So your touch really does indicate a lot. And so those two characters fell in love with their visuals and with their touch. Mm-hmm.
Would you describe yourself as like a touchy person?
Oh, good gosh,
because I've already
yes.
noticed in yes. our conversations today, you've already like reached out and grabbed people. I remember my now wife, Chelsea, and I met you briefly on the floor of Comic-Con back in like 2015 or something.
Oh, yeah.
And you were just kind of walking around on the floor, yeah. and we saw you, and we're like, oh, that's Doug Jones. And we have a picture with you, and the picture, our faces are like right up next to each other. You just smush our face together. It's like, whenever I show that picture, people are like, oh, are you guys really good friends? It's like, no, we just randomly met that day. He's just such a warm...
We are now.
Yeah. But it's so grounding. Like, I think every time I've met you, you've just grabbed my hand with both of your hands, and I just I think, especially in the convention scene, it can be kind of daunting for a lot of us at any point when you're coming in, because you're just around these incredible artists that you've admired who are your peers, but imposter syndrome, you never feel like
I don't belong here, all that, yeah.
And so it's just kind of, at least for me, I get Jenna, our friend who you know, Jenna Cannell, who you know mm-hmm. very, very well, she jokes, Catherine will always be late because she's in her room pacing. She's so nervous. And it's true. I to come down, I get so nervous. But every time I've seen you at a convention, you just like bring me right down to like, you do. You just ground it. I'm sure you're like that for everybody. And I think it is the touch.
Well, thank you. That's very, very sweet of you. I wasn't always a hugger.
Really?
Yeah. When my dad passed away when I was 18 years old, so it was kind of early. He was only 50.
Oh, man.
And I, again, had been kind of a geeky kid that didn't feel like I belonged. I was made fun of a lot, so I had to develop a sense of humor. So it was all about this and then run away. Mm-hmm. And when my dad passed away, my 3 older brothers and I all hugged for the first time ever. Wow. At his funeral. And so I was like, this feels right. I am a hugger, and I have my love language is touch. My number one is touch. So I thought, I'm going to keep this in my act from yeah. now on. And so I became a hugger that day and have never stopped since, from 18 years old till now I'm 63. So it's been a while.
Yeah.
Been a while.
Yeah, I'm also a hugger, and just like when I'm talking to people, I really like to, you know, just like connect with them. Mm-hmm. Do you ever start second guessing yourself, especially in like recent years where there's more of a conversation about like consent and misinterpreted touches and stuff like that?
I never want to be that guy.
Exactly. You never want to be misinterpreted, right, even though you just mean it from probably like a friendly, you know, a humanist level of connecting person to person.
Right, right. Well, yeah. Especially at the convention, doing the convention circuit, meeting fans, there's a line of people there waiting for you. And I hug everybody. But now I've taken to saying, is it okay if I hug you?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then they'll get consent. Yeah. So it's easily fixed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love, though, that you are so aware of it. I think you are aware of boundaries and consent more than any, not to like throw a lot of straight men under the bus, but like you are. I think like in our friendship, I really admire you, James, in that you're always like checking in and for women and marginalized people and making sure that, you know, we feel seen and respected. It's huge. I think I would never second guess a touch from you.
Well, that's good. You know? I'm glad. Thank you.
It's nice to hear. Yeah.
Yeah. And same with you. I think there's just certain people who just give off this, like, you know, it's genuine. Yeah. But that is, you're talking about nonverbal communication.
Exactly. Right. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, have you heard that concept of the five love languages? There's a physical touch, there's words of affirmation, gift giving and receiving.
Favors. Or
acts of service.
Yes, acts of service.
Like, you know, I love you, I'll wash the car kind of a thing. And then also, quality time. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And people different. I'm glad when I saw that book, I was like, oh my gosh, this makes perfect sense. Because not everybody speaks the same languages as their number one, you know, communicator for love. And so you can feel rejected by somebody when you've reached out in a certain way with one of those languages that they don't really speak as well.
Yeah,
so
you're something like, oh, that you prioritize me. Where it's like, oh, no, can't you see how much I love you? I'm doing all this stuff for you. And they're like, yeah, but you're not spending quality time with me.
Or you're not telling me you love me every day. I need the words, whatever it is.
Yeah,
right, exactly.
And so different people need the different types of language.
Right.
So.
And once you figure that out, it's like, oh, this makes better sense. We can understand each other and try to speak each other's language more. And because Mrs. Laurie and I are hit and miss with that. I'm my top two are like probably physical touch and words of affirmation. I'm a talker.
Okay.
And she's more quality time and acts of service. Mm-hmm. So it's like woo. So once I got that, it's like, I will wash the dishes. That will tell her. You know what I mean? Or whatever.
And my wife and I would say also have different love languages because like I'm an acts of service. Like I'm like, no, I'm doing all this stuff and she's more quality time. And it's like,
which you really have to carve out.
Exactly.
Yeah. I know.
Okay. We should probably also hang out and just talk. Sometimes.
Right. Right. Yeah. Doesn't matter what you're doing as long as you're together, kind of a thing. Right. Yeah. Right.
So it's good to recognize those and then you can.
Don't you love that we have
middle.
This Scream Dreams logo here and we're talking about our love languages?
No, but I love that we talk about this all the time. Like, and you're a master of this, right? Like exploring fear and like how it brings us together in an interesting way. Mm-hmm. Because when you're scared, we talk about this a lot on the show, like it's the closest you can be to understanding what another human is going through without going through it yourself. Mm-hmm. But then everything comes up and you're kind of united in this thing that you've just gone through together.
Right.
So it is kind of a love journey in a way.
Fear is very bonding, isn't it? I mean, because when you're in a scary movie, you grab somebody, right?
Yeah.
And they're grabbing you back. Like, you're holding on to each other. And once you're through the movie and you survived, it's like, we did it. High five. we made it. You know, that's a bonding thing. Yeah.
What scares you? Are you you play sometimes these, like, no, well, some are terrifying. A lot of your monsters are, or creature character, nonverbal
like
characters.
Misunderstood.
Are not. Yeah,
misunderstood.
I mean, the one that got me, and I will never forget this because I'm a huge Buffy girl, like growing up. Hush, obviously, was just like, for me, that was the first time Buffy scared me. I loved the creatures in Buffy. They did a great job of like always making the creatures really interesting and kind of compelling, even if they were evil.
Mm-hmm.
Hush was the first time I was scared watching that show. So what does scare you then? What gets you?
Mm-hmm. Not much.
Okay.
Because since I've been there and done that and played so many of them, for me, it's the nonverbal thing again when I don't understand what's happening, what's unseen around the corner kind of a thing is mm-hmm. is scarier to me than like in the face, because yeah. I've done that before and it's like you know. But the two characters I've played that scare me when I watch them, and again I can watch myself and go in the most gruesome of things, but the pale man from Pan's Labyrinth,
great,
again nonverbal, didn't talk, he was just wanting to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that's it.
Yeah,
and saying the whys. Why is he doing this? That's not answered for me. That scares me. Like if I knew why, maybe I could fix this.
Yeah,
and get out of here alive. But and then also the gentleman from Buffy. Also that creeped me out when I watched that episode back, the Hush episode, because we were smiling and doing dastardly. We were cutting out 7 hearts and had to take them home in jars, and no one explained why.
Yeah,
right. what can we do to like not have this happen? Wasn't answered. So that's frightening to me, is when I'm a detail person and I want everything, like I want to jot off like my list for the day, and making that monster stop wanting my heart would be one of them, and I don't know how to check that off.
Yeah,
that scares me. Exactly.
Do you have to come up with the why then to convincingly play a character?
Well, I
think
you, as an actor, you want, you know, you try to come up with your reasons. Like I think the gentleman in Buffy only came around so many years. It wasn't every year. And once we had our 7 hearts, we went away for a while, satisfied. So was that to keep, like, where do we go? Where do we live? Was that to keep a life force going of some way? Because we obviously are not mortal. So we must have some kind of immortal need for these mortal hearts, and then they'll give out at some point, so we need to come and collect some more, I guess. Uh-huh. That was my idea. I don't know. And the pale man, and from Pan's Labyrinth, when little Ophelia comes down under into the, you know, I played the Fawn in that movie too.
Yeah.
So of course,
and
Guillermo del Toro having me play both of those characters, I thought he was just a cheap ass who wanted to get 2 parts for, you know, the price of one. Partially true, but the other part was that the Fawn had kind of created all these tasks for Ophelia to pass so that she could become the princess and take her rightful place in the underworld once again, because she had forgotten her past. So the Pale Man was one of those tests that he set up for her, and he warned her, you know, about him. He's very dangerous, muy peligroso, and whatever, don't eat anything while you're there. So here she gets down there, and there's this lavish table of food set up. And she couldn't help herself, and she grabbed a grape, and that woke me up, and then I come after her. So you see, I had withered away. I have very saggy skin. All that was, like, again, that was a 6-hour makeup application.
Oh, boy.
All glued on to me with silicone saggy bits. And
who did the makeup in that one?
DDT Efectos Especiales from Barcelona, Spain.
Okay.
And they won the Oscar for Best Makeup that year. Yeah, so they were delightful people. So he awakens and is like, all he knows is that he's hungry. Again, when you're playing a bad guy, I don't think that twisting the mustache and being like, I want to be evil today. I don't think they think that. I think they think, I want to survive like anybody else today, and I'm just making some bad choices to do so. Mm-hmm. Right. So he's just kind of, he wakes up hungry. And because of all the sagging bits, I thought, oh, he probably was robust and full at one point, but he fell asleep because no one came to visit him, and he's withered away. Now he's waking up because someone actually ate off of his table like they weren't supposed to do, and now it's like food time. There she is. Ah, that's all he knew, is it's like you know, slice of beef. He didn't know any different, right? Mm-hmm. So there's the threat, is like, why wasn't answered. And so here's this girl running from him. So that terrified me watching myself in that case too. Yeah, but his backstory was just hunger, I think, if anything, and he was just trying to survive like anybody. And unfortunately, she happened to be what he thought was lunch, right?
You mentioned the 6-hour process for that.
Yeah.
What was the most extensive makeup process you've gone through?
This is a very good question that I get asked a lot, because everyone, how long did that take?
Yeah.
So the longest makeup application process ever for me on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Now the test makeups are going to be the longest. And the longest test makeup, I think it was 11 hours once for, might have been the first Hellboy movie. Abe Sapien when I played the Bluefish guy in that, and then also I was a cameo at the end of Quarantine. Mm-hmm. I was the thin infected man.
Oh, okay.
That's the kind of American remake of Brett.
Yeah. All I was, yeah, yeah. Right, exactly. And all I was wearing was whitey tidy underwear. But yeah. I was also like an old. I was afflicted with rabies that I self inflicted, mm-hmm. and was kind of I'm an older fella. So they and I had like a swollen forehead and like scraggly hair and from head to toe like airbrushed or glued on sagging pectorals. Bonier shoulders than my own, so it was all glued on and then edges blended, so that took artistry. So the test makeup for that was about 11 hours and
luckily with test makeup you don't have to film
you're not filming that day. Exactly, that's why they can take their time and be like precise. Mm-hmm. Do you like that color? I don't know. Right, that's the test makeup day. But then ongoing basis was back to Abe Sapien in the first Hellboy movie. It was 7 hours a day.
Ooh, and so it's 7 hours in the chair, and then you
and
go
and then
shoot.
You work for 12 hours, yeah. And then you have 2 hours of cleanup. So it's
the removal.
Oh, yeah, removal, right? Mm-hmm. And then you're back in it the next day. So I didn't sleep much that year. But even those 7 hours, they're not building it from the ground up every day. Mm-hmm. They are pre-made prosthetically. Now, for instance, when I Star Trek Discovery, I'm an alien named Saru with a head and hands kind of makeup. And it looks very, very detailed, and I tell people that's only 2 hours a day. Now, how could that be only 2 hours a day? Because they do most of the work ahead of time. Mm-hmm. All the sculpting and molding and pre-painting is done.
Yeah, they can paint the prosthetics.
That's all done at the shop. Right. Yeah. Getting it onto me is the last step.
Yeah.
Right. So those makeup times can vary, you know, everywhere from 2 to 7 hours.
At this point, do you have a time limit that you're like, no, I can't do this anymore? Like,
yeah, right.
I mentioned I was 63, right?
Yeah. Oh.
So, the older I get, the older the process gets, I think. But so I'm not saying a flat no to a time limit. But I am getting more picky. Does the story sing to me? Does the character sing to me? And do I really, really want to be a part of this? Is it a story that I need to help tell? Mm-hmm. I'm considering that way more now than before. It's like, it's a gig, it pays, I'll do it. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say like Jack Frost 2, which you weren't in makeup for.
I wasn't.
But I'll always bring it up just because I remember watching that movie and being like, it's fucking Doug Jones, dude.
Bless your heart. Bless your heart for even knowing that. My God.
The Revenge of the Killer Mean Snowman.
We have a game later. I thought about throwing that in there.
Oh, you should have. It's a classic.
So
did you? Oh, it's
so,
in there.
So like that. But I'm pursuing more human characters now.
Yes. Yeah.
And because of my history and my resume and what I'm known for, a lot of those characters, human characters that are seeking me and the offers I'm getting. Are like a demon in human form, mm. or a dastardly serial killer, or whatever. Yeah, I'm getting that a lot.
And are you fine with that, or do you also want to play
again, it's like I'm getting a little picky with it.
Sure.
I'm not a lover of blood on the wall splatter, you know, torture porn. I'm not really a fan of that. I'm more, when I do horror or dark movies, I'd like it to have a redemptive quality to it, whatever that is. Did we learn a lesson? Did good win over evil?
Yeah.
I like that kind of storytelling better.
Yeah.
Is there like a dream like kind of character, creature or otherwise you'd like to take on or like?
Well, as far as like anything non-human goes, I think I've played them all.
Yeah.
to my satisfaction. Yeah. What's left would be I was if you asked me this a few years ago, I would have said a vampire, but I've played several now.
Yeah. What we do in the shadows, right? Yeah.
Battle Nathanas on what we do in the shadows. I love him. I love him.
Yeah.
And then I've also was an ancient vampire on Guillermo del Toro's The Strain, if you remember that show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Recurring in about 6 episodes. And then I also, I have a, and I finished, we completed a Nosferatu movie remake. Years ago that it still is not out yet. It finally got through all the post-production and we had a couple of test screenings at conventions I was at in Detroit and Dallas.
Oh,
went nice. Super well, and the audiences really responded well. So it's done and ready, but distribution isn't with us yet.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what stage it's in. And we're running, you know who's chasing us is Robert Eggers' Nosferatu.
Yeah, yeah. Right. That's what at first I thought you were talking
with
about.
With Bill Skarsgård in the role that I played. Yeah, so he's younger and hotter. We got to get ours out first. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to be the copycat. Yeah. So... yeah, so hopefully that'll be out this year still. Uh-huh. I hope so. Yeah. Because it's done and ready.
A lot of vampire stuff lately.
Yeah.
Last Voyage of the Demeter and
Right.
Renfield. I'm here for it. I love the vampires.
Yeah. So, and with Nosferatu too, our version is kind of an interesting mix of the old movie from 1922 mm-hmm. and the new movie and the new one we're making. So all new actors, but we were filmed on green screen and combined with the old movie. So they created backdrops from the old film.
Okay.
That I got to play in the same environment Max Schreck did when he played Nosferatu. Oh, so cool. And we might have had, but with dialogue and sound. So it's a more completed movie now. Because silent films, there's a lot missing. You know, mm-hmm. You know, you'll see people doing this, and then the dialogue card comes up that says, "Yes, mother." You said way more than that, right? Yeah. So our movie does flesh out all that, and it stays very true to the original film, though. Yeah. So I'm really, really happy with it. And it's in black and white, ours is.
Oh, cool.
And I believe that Robert Eggers is in color, and he might have taken some, you know, Robert Eggers liberties. I don't know. I don't know. We'll find out. He's a great filmmaker, so I can't wait to see his.
Yeah.
And also, I can't wait for ours to be seen. Mm-hmm. There's no reason we can't have both.
Well, the thing with stories like that, I think, is also like they're classics for a reason. Any sort of like archetypal trope, right, is something that can be reinterpreted by different people, and it looks different when different people interpret it. Mm-hmm. You know, your version of Santa Claus, for example, is not going to be James' version of Santa Claus or my version of Santa Claus. You know, they're all going to be different. And that extends to to demons, to creatures, to just people.
Yeah.
You know, even if you're, you know, your Macbeth is different from someone else's Macbeth.
Right. You know? We all put our own spin and our own personality into it.
Yeah, it's important not to just do an impersonation of the person who had the role beforehand.
Exactly.
Literally, I was just talking about this with Chelsea last night because we are taking an acting class right now, and the instructor mentions that we're doing these scenes, don't try to just imitate the person who's done it. And she had the perfect example. Think of the Joker, just all the different classic Jokers iterations of it, all
true,
completely unique spins based on the personal actor. Mm-hmm. So it's never too late to make a classic version of an old character.
Is that one you'd want to do? I feel like you would be a fantastic
Joker. I'd rather do Riddler, be honest with you. I'm in the Batman world.
Yeah.
Now, you remember, I was in Batman Returns, by the way. I was one of Penguin's sidekicks.
He
hung out with the Red Triangle Circus gang.
Yes,
and I was Thin Clown in the credits.
You hang out with Danny?
Let's be honest.
A little bit?
Hung out with Danny a little bit, yeah. We were sat in makeup chairs next to each other.
Oh, cool.
And he called me, "How you doing, kid?" This tall. Looking up at me.
How
you
old
doing,
were
kid?
You at the time? How old were you?
Good question. I was 31 while we were filming that.
Wow.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Are you the I know you said you're the youngest of four brothers. Are you the tallest?
No. My tallest brother is 6'6".
Oh, wow.
And I am 6'3". I was 6'3 and a half. I think I've lost an inch somewhere.
Sure. Yep, that happens.
Might be in the car. and then my other two brothers started at 6'3", so who knows what they are now. Because we're all older fellas now.
And do they all work in entertainment?
No, we're all so different from each other. My oldest brother, Bobby, is a PhD in molecular biology. He was a college professor for years. Okay. Retired now. Brother Tommy is a marketing genius. He's been in the corporate world from one company. Yeah. He actually worked with Hallmark for a while.
Oh, wow.
In their ambassador cards division. Uh-huh. He's retired now as well. And then Brother Richie is a licensed therapist in the state of Indiana.
Wow, so, very, yeah, very
so,
different.
So he's psychology boy.
Yeah.
And then I'm actor boy. Yeah. So, but I can glean a lot from them. I've used all of them, my brothers, in character studies and helped them get me on film in a character that draw. My brother Bobby especially, he's the scientist. So I played a lot of mad scientists.
Yeah.
Or even on Star Trek Discovery with all of my science talk as Saru. Oh gosh, those scripts. You've memorized dialogue before,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Yep.
When you're memorizing science fiction dialogue in blocks of with terminology that doesn't exist in the real world, and blah, 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 names and ranks and, blah, 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 and orders and oh my gosh! So I channel my brother Bobby because he talks like that. Okay. Yeah.
Do you feel support from them in your career path, or have you ever felt like? a lesser than, or that they've ever looked down on you,
that? Well, you know, when you grow up in Indiana and you say, I want to be in showbiz, it's like, great, what else you
want
to do?
Yeah, what do you really want to do?
Right. That's a cute idea. But, you know, and but as I've come up, you know, when they would see me on their TV, or I'll give my mom as the best example. God rest her soul. She passed away about 10 years ago. But she was sent out the Christmas family newsletter every year and would refer to me as a struggling actor into my career. Doug's still a struggling actor out in L.A. And I was like, she didn't really understand what I was doing or how much I was making. She didn't understand. No, that's fine. I didn't want to correct her. So
at least put working actor, mom.
Something. Yeah. I send her letters like going, hey, watch me on CBS tonight. I'll be blah, whatever. And she would tune in and go, that's cute. So.
My family's too.
It was at the beauty parlor. She was getting her hair did. Okay, she was getting her hair done, and the tattooed nose ring girl that was working on her was talking with another girl in the shop about Hellboy, the Hellboy movies. I think it was after 2008 when the second one came out, and my mom's like, Hellboy, I think my son's in that, and so the lady's like, who's your son? He played a fish blue guy, and the girl goes, your son is Doug Jones? And my mom was like, you know his name? I'm like, yes. Oh my gosh. So all the girls in the shop are like, oh, you go to Doug, this is Doug Jones's mom. And so she was like, well, you know, kind of taken with it.
Hope the newsletter changed after that.
I know.
Yes.
It did?
Yes.
What did it say? Actor?
My esteemed son.
My esteemed fish actor son.
Critically acclaimed son. Yeah, I don't know. And then I was at her house once after that, visiting in Indianapolis where we lived. She was there. She had a maintenance man coming over to fix the air conditioning. And when I was visiting, and by then I had given her, like, I had been doing the convention, so I gave her like a copy of all my 8x10s. There were like 30 of them from I signed all of them to mom, and I wrote the notes on all of them, and I gave her as a package one time before this. So our air conditioning guy came. I was sitting in the dining room working on something, and then all of a sudden she comes into the dining room going, oh, he's in here. Like, oh, no. So here comes this maintenance guy. Mr. Jones, it's so nice to meet you. Hi. I'm like, nice to meet you, too. I'm looking at mom. What? And he said, I really loved you in the Fantastic Four movies. I'm like, okay. So mom had taken one of my 8x10s, the Silver Surfer, and left it on the counter where they would be settling up the bill.
Oh,
a subtle little thing, just to leave it there as a visual. And so he's like, they're you know, he's writing his her invoice and whatnot. Going, where'd you get that? oh, that's my son.
I love your mom. That's amazing.
I love my mom too. Oh gosh. And so he's here. And that's why. And then that leads up to, oh, here he is in the dining room. Yeah.
Did she get a good discount?
Yeah, right.
I would hope so. It didn't work for me. I got pulled over by a cop in Beverly Hills. I might have rolled through a stop sign, let's just say. And so the police officer asked me, where are you headed? And I said, I'm going headed to a costume fitting. It was for a commercial years and years ago. And and so he goes back to his car, runs all my stats, and comes back and says, were you the Silver Surfer? And I said, this is it. Yes, I was. Oh, that's really great. Well, here's your ticket. And you've got
I feel like here in LA, that doesn't fly.
It may work in Burbank, but not Beverly Hills.
It'll work on the highway in Oklahoma, but not here.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right.
That's okay. My grandmother, and she also recently passed, and I was very close with her and adored her, and she's an incredible, incredible woman. Mm-hmm. I was home just before with her, and took her to church. She's very religious, and then we got breakfast, and I was saying something I had to do for taxes this year, and she goes, oh. So you do make money doing that.
Oh, heavens.
And I was like, yeah, like it's my full-time job. Yeah. And she was like, oh, that's so good. You know, I always thought you were, what's that thing French people are? Destitute? No. bohemian.
Right. Like you're living on someone else's couch. Yeah. Burning incense. Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
and
I love it.
The sweetest thing, because she is so supportive. Of course. We wrote letters back and forth, but she didn't care what I did as long as I was happy, but she really genuinely did not think I made a living
doing it. That's just precious, isn't it? I know.
I don't know what she thought I was doing in my free time.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Aww. Oh, Rumble. Oh, I hope she's with us today.
I think she is.
What do I feel? What is that?
Does it feel warm?
It's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Kind of
comforting.
Like extra sugar in your coffee, you know?
Yes. What's happening?
Oh, I think
ready
it's here.
For a side.
Oh, here I am. Great to see you guys again. Doug!
What's wrong,
bro? You didn't know who was coming in today.
I didn't know.
It was shocking.
We've known each other for a while.
Love you. Love you too. Well, I'm so glad to see you here with us today.
It was a nice surprise.
Yeah. And you guys were talking earlier about all the, you know, different roles that people have played and what do you want to play. And you wanted to play a vampire one time and you did get to play a vampire.
I played several now. Yeah.
You played several.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not really a creature actor, but I actually want to play creatures. So
really?
Can we switch? Because I want to play more creatures and you want to play more
humans.
You know, humans.
Yeah, yeah.
But I really enjoyed playing a vampire too. And when I did Jacob's Wife, that was one of the things that I was just saying, that I wanted to play one of those classic characters of horror.
Yeah.
You know, and I got to play that and
manifested it.
That was I wasn't in like makeup or anything, but I got to wear the teeth and
yeah,
I don't know.
And assume something that was not quite human.
Not quite me, and like superhuman in a way.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
vampires are more self-actualized people in a way. They're stronger and
faster,
more confident and faster. Mm-hmm. And,
Get more sleep.
They do. They do.
Sleep.
Especially like during the winter time.
Summertime.
When the days are longer. Yeah.
But actually, when you're saying that, I was thinking, did I sleep in somewhere or someplace that was different? I didn't actually do that when I was in Jacob's Wife.
No, she didn't.
I just slept with my husband.
Oh, right. Well, you were also kind of like becoming a vampire. Like you were like
I was still becoming a vampire.
Yeah. Now, vampire lore goes all over the place.
It does.
It?
It's kind of pick and choose. Mm-hmm.
It's like some vampires are burned by the sun, some turn sparkly.
I know.
I'm just saying.
That's a whole other offshoot of vampirism.
I know.
Yeah, that's a whole other movie. Yeah. Right there. Mm. Cool. Well, we're going to play a game today.
Oh, we are. I figured the bowl meant something.
I have a bowl.
She just brought a treat for us.
Yeah.
So, hope you like paper.
Actually, you know I was going to be here today because during the break we were saying, okay, how many roles have you played?
Yeah.
We just don't know.
I'm not quite sure. I look at IMDb myself. They're like, oh, like I was in that too. Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, there's so many. And after a while, you kind of forget, right?
You do.
But we remembered a few of them.
Oh, dear.
So we have a few different movies in here.
Okay.
And we're going to play this game where we're going to pick one piece of paper out of the bowl, all of us.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And then based on the character that you played in that movie, we're going to come up with our own little version of what that movie is. Mm-hmm. Is that right, Catherine?
Yeah.
Catherine, even though I'm the sidebar, she creates most of the games.
Oh,
so is that correct, Catherine? Because I haven't played this game yet.
Yes. Yeah, we played it with Greg Nicotero previously. So basically, we will all go around and pick a film, and we will have to create you will have to create a character, creature, or otherwise that could live in all of the worlds, or a story that is like the hybrid universe of all of these worlds.
Oh.
Okay, so is he going to...
We'll help you, don't worry.
Is that four titles we're working with then?
Well, it's four different characters, but he's going to start us off with talking about what the scenario is, either with the character or with a scene. We might need a little direction.
Basically, if a studio bought all these properties and was like, let's make a crossover sequel to all of them.
All of them.
Yeah.
What would that
look like? Are you tired of cooking? Cool. You don't have to anymore.
Factor has delicious, ready-to-eat meals that are chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and sent straight to your door.
They are. With over 35 meal options to choose from each week, you'll never get bored. With midday snacks, smoothies, wellness shots, you'll be on your A game all day long.
Yeah. How do you like Factor?
I love Factor, especially when we're doing things like this podcast taping, 3 in 1 day. Mm-hmm. I can just throw it in the microwave and I'm good to go. And it keeps me on, like, you know, my health regimen.
Yeah. I don't have time to cook. Never. I don't have time to cook at all.
You don't even have time to be here right now. We don't know how we got you here.
it starts to weigh on you when every time you talk to someone, they're like, I know you're really busy and you don't have time. I'm like, yeah, oh God. But that's why I have Factor, so I can eat at least and keep myself alive. Because Factor is way less expensive than takeout, and it takes so much less time than waiting at a drive-thru.
Yes, without Factor, James would actually be dead meat. All you have to do is heat up the meal for 2 minutes and you're all set.
That's right. You don't have to prep it. You don't have to cook it. You don't have to clean it up. Just toss it in the trash. Get out of there.
That's exactly right. So if you would like some Factor meals, head to factormeals.com/screamdreams50 and use code screamdreams50 to get 50% off.
That's why it's 50. It's a code screamdreams50 at factormeals.com. /screamdreams50 to get 50% off.
That's right. Screamdreams50, Factor Meals. You won't regret it. You know what's a nightmare? Dehydration.
Yeah. You know what's an even worse nightmare? Plastic pollution.
That's why we love Liquid Death and their evil mission to murder your thirst and kill plastic pollution.
That's right. Their aluminum cans are as metal as they get. So pick some up today because we all need something refreshing to reach for when we wake up from a nightmare.
It's true. Cheers.
I'll pick first.
Okay. Sure. No cheating.
I like that you're adding the sound.
Yeah, I'm not looking.
That ASMR.
Okay, I have Hocus Pocus. All right. And you were talking about Hocus Pocus earlier, and that's right. A movie that I'm familiar with.
Billy Butcherson, Goofy Zombie.
The Goofy Zombie,
yes. Lose your head. Before zombies were cool.
Love him. He's one of my favorites.
Yeah, me too. I loved him dearly. Okay, my
mouth,
turn.
Mouth sewn shut for,
mouth for a lot shut. Of it.
For a lot of it, yeah.
For a lot of it. And yeah. I finally opened it up at the end, near the end, and was like, ugh. Okay, so I picked Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which we talked about earlier, as the silent gentleman who just smiled and tore hearts out and floated around. Okay.
So terrifying. That was a
zombie
that,
and a silent gentleman.
That was the one that won them their Emmy, right? Was that episode?
Well, it was nominated.
Nominated.
Yeah, Emmy nomination. I never watched Buffy, but I have seen that episode.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well,
I think that, and was it Once More with Feeling? Is
the musical.
Oh, yeah. I feel like those are the two
fan favorites. Yes.
I love a good musical vampirism. Yeah. Pan's Labyrinth.
Okay.
Okay.
Ooh, this, wow. Really, that's your, I mean, to me, that's like, that's your seminal role.
I think it was the perfect movie. Why. It was like, it was history, relationship drama, it was fantasy, fairy tale, and a little bit of horror.
It was
very scary to me. Yeah. You were really scary to me, actually.
It's funny how the human parts are the scarier parts of that movie.
They're the monsters.
Well, as this character, or how do you do that?
The pale man?
Yeah.
He was scary, for sure.
Yeah.
But
like, really.
But a Guillermo del Toro thumbprint is that the monsters are his heroes, and there's a human that's gone off the rails.
It's like fascist.
They're usually the monster in his movies.
Right. Shape of Water is like
Shape of Water, right?
Mm-hmm. Michael Shannon.
Michael Shannon was a great bad guy.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
All right, and the last one is The Adventures of Rocky and
Bullwinkle.
Oh!
Okay, now the lesser known.
Okay.
I had a cameo in that.
Okay.
Our lead actress, her name is going to escape me. A young blonde, beautiful girl. And
we could look it up.
You could look it up. Yeah, sure.
We have our team back there to look it up.
Crack team.
Crack team on it over there.
Yeah. She was also in Coyote Ugly, I think she was. Anyway, she was an FBI agent who was going on an adventure. It was called The Adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle. So, and I was one of three of her FBI cohorts that got kidnapped and turned into vegetables.
Oh.
I was a carrot. There was a potato and a beet. So we were so when you meet us in the movie, we are in our vegetable state.
Okay.
We have we have a name?
Renee Russo?
Not Renee Russo. She played she was Natasha. Piper.
Lori?
Parabeau. Piper Parabeau.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Lovely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I was the carrot.
Okay.
And so we should clarify when you say you were in a vegetative state.
But we were kind of like this and strapped down to chairs in a row.
Okay.
And then at
it
the
was
end,
a double entendre.
I like that we have a vegetable in our little scenario.
Okay. Yeah.
So
exactly.
So we have a carrot.
We have a carrot. The FBI agent.
And
okay.
We have an FBI
and
agent.
And I morph back into my human self by the end when the spell is broken.
Okay.
So there's that. We have a zombie.
Hocus pocus. Yeah.
Zombie.
A fun, goofy zombie. We have a terrifying, silent. Heart terror outer smiler
yes,
guy.
Oh yeah, okay.
Yes.
And we have Pan's Labyrinth. So we have the Pale Man. We also have a fawn in that that I played.
Yes, yes.
Oh sure, yeah.
Yeah, that's
let's
right.
Not neglect
that's
that.
That's five characters now. And then Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Carrots.
Is that all of them? Do we get them?
That's all of them. Yeah.
What did I have? Yeah.
There's a lot there. Okay. So.
So.
So. I feel like we shouldn't put this on our guests.
I got an idea.
To like start off. Okay.
I got an idea. Okay. So Billy is awoken from the dead again.
Yes.
And the Sanderson sisters are in charge of him again. They're controlling him.
Yeah.
And they say that he must go to the Pale Man's table. And they say don't eat anything. But when he gets there, there's a carrot.
Okay.
There's a carrot.
The carrot starts talking to him and asking for help.
Because he's really an FBI agent.
That's right.
Yes.
Right. Who was investigating the Pale Man.
The Pale Man.
For the feds.
Yeah.
Before he got turned into a carrot.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, in this world, these zombies who come back from the dead are also very hungry.
Mm-hmm.
So the zombie kind of comes back and looks at that carrot and says, I want to eat that carrot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But the carrot's talking, so he's like conflicted. Mm.
Sure.
You know.
Mm-hmm. It's like.
Should I eat something that's talking?
It's like when you visit a farm and the chickens, you hear them cluck. And you're like, ah, shit.
And the Pale Man kind of wants to eat the zombie, probably.
Yeah. So everyone's very hungry for each other. And then, of course, in comes, you know, the silent, smiley, hush creatures.
Right.
And they mime to Billy that it is okay to eat living things because they take hearts every year. They're like trying to explain to him through sign language. Don't feel bad.
Right.
Just eat the carrot.
Just eat the carrot, right.
Yeah.
That's really a human.
We have a lot of characters who can't talk, but, you know, they can communicate through your expressive acting.
Billy Butcherson does talk.
Like, he does.
Yeah, he's kind of got a dusty voice. Mm-hmm. Okay, he can give some verbal. Gentleman Pale Man can't.
Maybe he's going to take over, and what would he say to everybody about what's been going on?
We guide things. Oh my gosh. I think he'd say, can't we all just get along and not eat each other? I think maybe that's where Billy would, he'd be the sensible one of all of them, I think.
Okay.
I think he would be.
I think this is also a good advertisement for Factor Meals. You know, because if Factor is late or you get the meal that you don't want, you can always eat the carrots that are undead.
Mm-hmm.
And
but like you want Factor Meals, you want to order Factor Meals with what the discount code ScreamDreams50
ScreamDreams50.
Because
what's the 50?
50
for 50% off.
Oh, we get half off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You want to eat the Factor Meals, hashtag ScreamDreams.
50
because that way you don't have to eat.
You don't have to eat the people, and the zombies don't have to eat the brains.
That's how it's resolved.
So I think
SponCon, Billy just breaks out the Factor Meals and gives one to the Pale
Man.
And gives the Pale Man
and he
says,
and he says, thank God I have this discount code because now I get 50% off, so I can have double the amount of Factor Meals and feed everybody.
Now, are Factor Meals delivered like a DoorDash kind of a thing?
I think so. Yes.
They're pre-made meals.
Pre-made. You sign up for it.
You simply heat up,
and they come every week. Right?
With no mess. No cooking required.
And no cooking and no cleaning, and you just throw it away.
She's right. You know what we could do, too? We could all gather together and eat the delivery boy.
Ooh.
Right, because he's
meals.
That's the third act twist.
Don't eat the delivery boy. That's their slogan. Factor Meals. So good, you'll want to eat
the delivery
boy.
There you go.
There's our slogan.
Yeah.
This is amazing.
Factor
this was a really good story.
Macros.
I think we could actually make this movie.
I would watch this movie.
Someone would fund it.
Factor Meals. If you like our sponsor, we'll make you a movie.
There you go. Yeah.
Bring it in under two and we'll get it made.
Right. We already have an advertiser. It's great. This is great. Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. Well, I want to be in your Hallmark movie too. So
we didn't talk about that. Yes, but that's another dream of mine, Barbara.
Yeah, to work together.
Work together in a Hallmark movie.
Because when I first met you, I was like, oh, I know Doug Jones. I wonder if he knows me. And you were like, of course I know you.
Barbara,
and I was like,
Crampton, are you kidding me?
No, but I was like, Doug Jones. You know, when I first met you, yeah.
Well, hey, you know what? There's always, in Hallmark movies, there's always like a widower or a widow. Mm-hmm. And if I'm the widower, she could make, we could do flashbacks.
We could talk about it. I could be in your scream dreams.
But you could show up and talk to me and give me advice.
Chrissy Fox and I have been wanting to make Doug the dad in a Hallmark Christmas movie for some time to make this dream a reality. We're putting it out into the ether. We're putting it out there. Okay, maybe it will happen.
And to play with Barbara Crampton on screen would be a dream for me.
I'll play your dead wife. Yes.
Okay. Yes. That's the scream part.
Okay. Yes. I'll be screaming from, you know,
the beyond.
Depths of the beyond. Okay. From beyond.
From beyond.
You know.
Okay.
Yes.
Which is where you must return to now.
I must return to the place from whence I came.
Oh, so this magical entrance is going to be a magical exit?
That's right. Oh. See you later.
Oh. There she goes.
Well, that was something.
Yeah.
Just, you know, magic of effects.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're used to that.
Magic of Barb, I would say at this point, too. Yeah.
What's next for you? I mean, that's what I mean. When you are the Oscar-winning creature, like, what's next?
What's more? Well, that's why I was able to say, like, maybe now is the time to start phasing out the rubber bits and the rubber and the glue. I've been exposed to a lot of toxic chemicals. Oh, my God. I'd love to just, like, be healthier. But... And then when Star Trek Discovery, our final season 5 will just be airing in April. April 4th is the start date for a weekly episodes on Paramount Plus. And that's our final season. So with that being over now, too, it's like, oh, well, now I'm not living in Toronto 9 months out of the year with rubber bits on. So maybe I can take that off and be like, oh. And What We Do in the Shadows, season 6 is filming right now, and that's their final season. I'll be back for a few more episodes. Mm-hmm. And I've been through 4 different looks on that, some rubber and glue, some not, some just me with a wig. So I don't know what stage we're going to be in for season 6. I don't know what I'm going to look like just yet. So, but once that's over, then that'll be over. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, huh, well then what's next is the great question, right? So more humans, yes. And you asked about a character that I haven't played that I would love to. And I think I would like to be a benevolent, helpful angel. Mm-hmm. Whether they're wings or not. Might be like a Clarence from, you know, what was that movie? Christmas movie. Jimmy Stewart.
It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a Wonderful Life. Yes. Clarence from It's a Wonderful Life, or something more visually stunning that has wings and with a glow around me. I don't know, but I did play an angel, the Angel of Death in Hellboy 2, The Golden Army, which was wings, but I had like a very frightening face. So something kind and gentle.
I think you'd make a great benevolent angel.
I think so. Thank
you. Thank you. I don't know what in, but
you are an angel, Doug Jones.
See how you are
being with us today. This has been my pleasure. Such a light, truly.
Well, thank you for
speaking of light.
Oh my gosh, we almost forgot to ask.
That's right.
You want to ask it?
On this podcast, we talk about fears, and you said that you don't have a lot that scares you, but for the things that do, is there a nightlight in your life, something that keeps you going, something that you look forward to every day when you wake up and that just drives you?
Oh, right. That would be my the lovely Mrs. Laurie. We've been married for, it'll be 40 years in April.
40 years, congratulations.
Old people say that. We've been married for 40 years. You gotta use that voice. The older we get together, the more we're like really, really happy that the other one's there.
Oh,
so that gives me a reason to wake up, for sure.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. That and my faith in God, and we share that together as well. So
good.
Well, thank you for being this. I wish you were here with us every time. You're just the best. You really, really are. I love you so much.
You get bored of my stories.
No, I don't think so. Sure. I don't think so. I think we could talk to you for days. If you liked this interview, please like, comment, subscribe, write in about your favorite Doug Jones film or creature, or just the characters he's played out of makeup, because he's also such a brilliant actor. We've all, I think we can say this, we worked together, the three of us, on a small film recently.
We did.
Which we're really excited about. I think it's called If It Bleeds. They announced something.
If It Bleeds
today.
It's an anthology of three shorts.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. And, that we all are involved in little bits.
I got to play a wacko.
A doctor, right?
Yes.
Cosmetic surgeon.
That's right.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And you don't have prosthetics.
I did not have prosthetics on. No. I just looked kind of off.
Yeah. You can subscribe to our Patreon. You can become a patron.
A patron. On Patreon.
On Patreon.
You had it right the first time.
Where we put extended episodes, ad-free episodes, all sorts of fun stuff. I'm missing the last one, I think.
Ring the bell.
Thank you. I got it.
You can do that. Just to make sure you get the new uploads in your feed.
Yeah, that's. Mm-hmm. But until next time, I am Catherine Corcoran.
And I'm James A. Janisse.
I don't know which one we're looking at.
I guess this one. Be sure to leave a light on.
Yeah, good job. Yeah.